The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another Nextlander podcast. Here we go. Alex Navarro. Normally, I open this and say, how you doing?
Uh-huh.
We probably know how it's going over there.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's going. It continues to go.
Let's just say that I've had a couple of small stress-related health things over the last week
okay.
that I've been keeping an eye on. And, well, they're getting better, but let's just say we're not there yet.
Okay, good. Brad, health? Okay,
you ain't got time to bleed.
You ain't got time to bleed, but you don't have time to read. You're sitting here with your dilated pupils.
Yes, I did have my eyes dilated about 90 minutes ago.
Uh-huh.
Can't really read anything at the moment.
Got
so.
Your blue blockers on, you're
yep,
ready to go.
That's right.
This is the most you have ever looked like Yoko Ono.
Getting my hair permed this afternoon.
You definitely do have some either future or geriatric vision.
Future geriatric, shall we say.
Future geriatric. Hey, I'll tell you what. You make it work.
Mm-hmm. You're working it, baby.
Yeah, yeah right. It okay. looks good. You make it work. It looks good on you.
Yeah.
Going
for like a Captain EO style of futurism.
Okay.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Kind of mid-80s.
Mid-80s, sure. Yeah.
Did Back they, to Future 2.
They still have that.
Captain What's EO, that? They probably tore that thing down.
Yeah.
That and Figment. Figment? Mm-hmm. Was that the other little dragon? They give you the option to not get dilated and do the other business?
Yeah, they asked if I wanted to skip it, but I haven't been to the eye doctor in 3 years.
Yeah.
And
get
it also
deep search.
It took me a month to get this appointment. And that was being an existing patient.
Yeah.
The other eye doctors I tried that I was not a patient with were like, how about February?
I just made an appointment like a couple of days ago with my doctor in a month out. Existing doctor was yep. like, hey, I want to, and it was a follow-up thing on another thing that I was like, hey, I'm following this up. It didn't go away. She's like, okay, how's December? Like, what the hell, man?
Well, yeah, everyone's trying to get in and use their health insurance while they still have it.
That's a good point,
that's
actually.
That's a good
yes.
point. Or before, yes, we have to do our health insurance again. I got to change mine. Let's not talk about that.
No. Because whenever that happens, we're never happy, is the thing.
I know it's going to be way more. It has gone up by hundreds of dollars every year since we have started Nextlander. I assume it has been going up by hundreds of dollars even prior to Nextlander, because it went up by hundreds of dollars when we were at CBS. Since I have been paying attention, goes up. You know what else goes up? Let's see. Where do I want to
Well, I can think of a couple of things, but I probably shouldn't mention them on this podcast.
I'd mention this to you, Alex. My intolerance for recommendations on Netflix, and this is my own fault, but we were watching something on Netflix with the family. I think it was Pixels, the movie Pixels.
That's not a good movie.
Yeah, it's
why
not.
Did you watch that?
My son said his friends recommended it, and then
did
we
you
were
tell
like,
him his friends are dumb?
In not so many words, I said, I think your friends have bad taste.
Yeah, that's okay.
And then he's like, well, I was like, well, I'll watch it. He's like, well, have you seen it? I was like, no. You know what? No, I have not. I worked with somebody.
You could have called me up. I could have gotten on
Alex,
the horn
I
there
said,
with him. I could have told him.
I remember when you saw it, and I said, Alex saw it, and he said it was terrible. I trust Alex's views on movies, but I will watch it with you. You know, it's not the worst thing in the world. It's just not, I don't think it's a great movie. But that's not really the point of this conversation. The point is
that now he learned that if you fuck Qbert, you will have Qbert babies.
Whoa.
And everybody needs to know that.
Wait, yeah. Really?
Yes.
That is what happens in that movie.
He also needed to know, like, there's a couple of other voice actors in there that my kids are having this realization that voice actors from animated things are humans, are real people. So, like, you know, like, hey,
sorry,
did you know
what?
That? Yeah, like, you
Santa
know,
Claus also isn't real. I don't know if they know
or,
that.
Or, like, you know, like, hey, you see that guy who's doing that dumb thing who's fucking Qbert? That's mm-hmm. the voice of Olaf. They're like, wait, what? Yeah, no, that's right. That's Josh Gad.
Guess
that's,
you'll never think of Olaf the same way again,
right, exactly.
Will you?
Exactly. And
wait, wait, hang on. Josh Gad gets to fuck Q-Bert?
Oh, Josh Gad super fucks Q-Bert.
Yeah, so that's, you know, look, not everybody
wins.
This
is the world we live in.
Yeah.
Is Pixels the one that's just like full of actual real video game characters as characters?
Yes.
Yeah, it's mostly, I would say, Midway and some Nintendo in there.
Okay, but they're all real? Because there was another CG animated video game movie, wasn't there?
Are you thinking of Wreck-It Ralph?
Yes, I think that's...
Oh, that's also real. Those are licensed
also, that
well.
Also has real licensed characters, but it treats them with much more respect than
and
Pixel does.
And it's a better movie.
Wait, there are two? Is Pixel CG animated or is it like...
So Pixel
live action with a lot of CG stuff in it.
I think Wreck-It Ralph is what I was thinking of the whole time.
Yes, no, Pixels is the Adam Sandler movie.
Sorry, no offense to Wreck-It Ralph. I actually adore Wreck-It Ralph. I think it's a very good movie.
All the offense to Wreck-It Ralph 2, but Wreck-It Ralph 1, pretty good.
Maybe I should tell you that.
Yeah, Wreck-It Ralph is good. Pixels, not so great.
Dog shit.
But
Adam Sandler's friends need to get paid.
But Adam Sandler's friends do need to get paid. Who's in that?
Kevin James.
I was going to
say. Is the president.
And Peter Dinklage and Josh Gad.
Boy, the Dink is the one that I feel the worst for in that movie because they are trying to do a Billy Mitchell thing with him, and he neither cares enough nor has the juice enough to make that one fly.
And I can't remember. My wife is so much better at this. You'd probably know in an instant who the like romantic interest is in it. But she's like, okay.
Oh, shit. Who is that?
She recognized her and was like, oh, that's such and such. And my wife is like, why is she in this movie?
Michelle Monaghan. Yes.
Okay. Yes, I did not recognize her from other stuff.
Beloved actress Michelle Monaghan. Why?
So we watched Pixels. Anyway, that was done there. But then, as we're searching for stuff, Netflix keeps being like, "You would love. We know what you would love."
No, you don't.
You would love Dan. You would love this. You would love this. You would love this. You would love this. And my kids kept being like, Dan. I was like, okay, God. We'll watch the trailer for it. Like, oh, it's, I don't know. It seems like an anime about ghosts and like aliens. And they're just like, Dan. Like, Dad, let's watch Dan. Like, okay, fine. We'll start watching it. And immediately I'm like, oh, man, I don't know. Am I being a prude? I'm not sure this one's for the kids. I'm watching it. You know, watching it, I'm like, okay, maybe it was just the beginning of it, and we're fine. Watching it, suddenly this woman is abducted by aliens and is down to her underwear, and one of the aliens opens a trench coat and has a giant mechanical dildo on it.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, okay, all right. And before they call the cops.
So I haven't seen this one, but what I have heard is that the first episode is the most that.
Okay.
The rest of the series is not nearly as aggressively horny as that one is.
I, for what it's worth, I kind of enjoyed what I was watching of it so far. But
whatever gets you rocks off, man.
Yeah, that's one I feel like my 12-year-old son watches on his own.
Yeah,
and
no, without
the
parents in the room.
Yeah,
yes.
Right. Exactly.
Yes.
And is like, what are you watching? Nothing. Smash Brothers videos. Why? What are you doing? What's up? How's lunch?
Let them discover the dirty anime on their own.
Yeah, so that's my gripe against the recommendation engine again. Vinny rails against the recommendation generation. You can pick it up now. And then what else happened? Let's kind of segue into the PlayStation 5 Pro because I've got a smooth ass segue here. Ready?
Uh-huh, smooth it.
Smooth it. I had to take apart some electronics this weekend to fix some stuff. One was successful. One was not so successful. One I broke and then had to fix again, but that's fine. I enjoy doing that. But we got our, Brad, you and I both received our PlayStation 5 Pro.
Mm-hmm.
And the first thing I noticed when I turned it on was something that you then came and were like, hey, Vinny, is your fan really loud in the PS5 Pro? And I was like, oh my God. It totally is. Not exceedingly loud.
No.
But noticeably loud.
But like too loud.
I wasn't planning to lead with this. It is not the jet engine that the PS4 Pro was at launch. I don't know if did you guys have PS4 Pros at launch specifically?
Because
they came out with a second model of PS4 Pro later that I went and traded my launch one in for because the first one was like intolerably loud. And this is not that. I want to be clear. PS5 Pro is not that. That was like that was like in God of War, the first like 2018 God of War. Mm-hmm. Like, could not hear the characters in the cutscenes. It was roaring so much.
I had initial PS5, but mine never bothered me.
My launch PS5 is utterly silent. I can't hear anything out of it at all. Same with the Series X. Like, I was like, beginning of this generation, I was like, man, finally, they solved it. Like, they made silent consoles, finally.
So this was a weird one because it's definitely is one of those things where you're like, bzzz. I'm like, oh, wait, what the fuck? The fan's kicking on already? I'm not even doing anything.
So this one, it's weird. And again, maybe we should lead with like the graphical capabilities of this thing. Not the fan noise.
What is the thing that stands out to you the most is what we start with.
I'm fucking annoyed that a $700 console sounds like this. Like,
it is the thing I noticed first.
Yes. Like, and so... the fan just kicks on anytime you run any game, because I've been testing it with like Animal Well, for example, which is like a 50 megabyte game. Like, that's a very low impact game in terms of processing. The fan just spins up when you launch a game, no matter what the game is and no matter what it's doing. So you're going to hear it constantly when you're playing stuff, no matter what.
And again, I don't want to overstate it, because it is not a jet turbine, but it is a noticeable thing that I feel like, coming off of my PS5, which I agree with you, is fairly quiet. Like, it's noticeably louder than that. So,
for sure. Yeah. And like it depends on the game, I could throw out a game like in combat in Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, for example, I can't hear it. But the first part of Alan Wake 2, when you're playing Saga in the woods creeping around, like, it's exceedingly quiet for like atmosphere reasons.
There, I hear what you're saying. You're right.
Like, all you hear at that point in a really quiet thing, especially something that's trying to establish mood, like that early Alan Wake stuff. Like,
right.
And it's not just a white noise. It's like kind of got a mechanical sound to it. It's a little bit of a grinding,
it's a whir,
ball bearing sound or something. Like, it just sounds like a cheap, shitty fan in a $700 console. And again, there's probably more interesting stuff to talk about with this thing, but it just like, it really soured my first impression of like, this is supposed to be the most luxurious piece of console hardware ever made. Like, you really cheaped out on the fan. Like, really? Come on, man.
So and look, this is just the first thing I noticed. I put my stand on it. I put my memory in it. I put the hard drive on it. I took the whole thing apart, put it all in. But what I did notice is that the PS5 Pro does seem, and this is similar to the PS5, does seem fairly user accessible. So the first thing I asked you was like, well, has anybody replaced that fan yet? And are there fans on the market? Because I assume people are going to just take that fan out and put new ones in. So are we still just waiting for the right fan?
That's my impression. So this has been a thing with PlayStations for a while, particularly the Slim. There's the whole idea of the fan lottery, because there are like better fans in some units and worse ones in others because they use different suppliers. And I keep up with that stuff because I'm a lunatic, even though I don't have a Slim. But yes, long story short, yes, people replace the fans in their Slims. But I don't think there are any fans on the market yet that you can put in a Pro. But so like my understanding is they're not super cheap. It's like $70 for a replacement fan for a Slim. So
for those little fans?
Yeah, well, it's a decent size cylinder shape kind of fan. But like, I'll pay the damn fan tax and go and jump through the hoops, because it is like pretty accessible. Like, and so yes, I will do the work and pay the money to put a quieter fan in this if it comes out.
And you run yours horizontally, because initially I thought maybe because I was running it vertically and I feel like the stand is blocking some exhaust ports on the bottom. I'm not sure if they go all the way through the case, but they are slotted on the bottom. And I was like, oh, this maybe it just is not doesn't have enough air intake or whatever, wherever it's come pulling air in from and exhausting from. Maybe I'm blocking it. Maybe it's a me thing. So I was actually somewhat relieved to know that. You running yours horizontally, also you heard some of that fan.
It's pretty universal. There are a good number of people on Reddit talking about the same issue. Like, people are not super thrilled. I mean, like, some people, it doesn't bother as much. Some people sit far enough away that they can't notice
I'm pretty close to mine, so.
Yeah, so I sit about 9, 10 feet away from mine, and I can still hear it clearly in a relatively quiet room.
Yeesh.
So aside from that, Brad, what's your experience with the PS5 Pro?
It definitely, does what it says it does. The noise issue aside, I've tried, I tried FF7 Rebirth, Dragon's Dogma 2, Alan Wake 2.
Okay.
Those are the three that really jump out at me as like, this is a night and day difference, because I played all of those on the base PS5 and all of them kind of struggled with performance in one way or another.
I was, this is not the fun thing that people want to know, but before you get into the nuts and bolts on the technical side, how was your PS5 to PS5 Pro transfer experience?
Oh my God. It got it, after about 14 hours, it was like 2/3 of the way done.
Wait, you copied games?
Yeah, I tried copying games partially because I just wanted to see how it would work.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like the system transfer, you can do it over to your LAN and it proceeds in two parts. The first part is like, okay, don't touch either of these consoles. They're going to reboot.
Yes.
If you do anything to these, it can fuck up the transfer and also maybe corrupt the data.
We're doing like, the serious business right now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's the like system transfer, quote unquote. So that's like all your settings, save games, like important stuff, right? And then once that's done, then it's like, okay, we're going to reboot. Now you can use your PS5 normally. Now we're going to transfer the games. That'll just happen in the background. That is so fucking slow.
You did that? I didn't even do it.
And that was only off the built-in drive on the PS5, which is like, what is that? Like realistically is like under like 700 gig. It's like 650, 680 gig.
I just skipped it. I was like, I'll just re-download
it. I should have done that. Like I said, I partially did it just to see how it would work because like max throughput over a LAN should be like over 100 megabytes a second. And I was like, I can't take that long for 600 gigabytes or whatever, but it runs at like a tenth of that speed.
Do PS5s have gigabit ports on them?
Yes.
Okay. So I just skipped that part. I just did the profile transfer stuff, which was actually kind of fine.
That doesn't take, that's took like 20 minutes. Maybe, something like that worked quite well.
The app and just did the whole thing.
Yeah. I should have stopped there like you did and just downloaded games.
So I was actually pleasantly surprised with, cause I thought I was going to have to, move stuff over. I think my PS4 to PS5 transfer was kind of a pain in the neck with the kids' profiles and everything and all their save games and getting their data over. But now it was fine. It was like very smooth. I just logged in with all of them. They're good. All their stuff came over. Multiple profiles came over. Settings, save games, all that nonsense just kind of came right over. So good on them. That was a fairly smooth process. I did not do the data transfer. Plugged in my like. Do you still use like a PS4 external drive for stuff? Or are you done with that?
I don't. I've been thinking about getting an SSD to put all the PS4 games on because they don't really benefit that much from being on the fast storage.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure.
That plugged in, it was fine. Picked it all up.
Yeah. Like external SSDs are still more expensive than I would have thought.
The only thing that, you know, I guess this wasn't as big an issue with my PS5 was the extra memory I got for it. You choose where you want to put games, right? I'm like, hey, do you want to put it on your M2 drive? Or do you want to put it on the native internal drive? I kind of wish it just was like, hey, if this fills up to a certain percentage, spill over to this kind of thing.
Yes, I fully agree with you. Both consoles do it this way.
Yeah.
The Series X also, if you plug that, you know, they have the proprietary card, but if you plug that thing in, it's the same thing of like, do you want to install this on the internal or the card? And it's like,
yeah.
Couldn't you just make it one giant volume and not make the user think about this?
Or like, just make it invisibly one giant volume. Like, right. I get it. It's two volumes, but just like fill it up to, you know, 60% and then move on to the next one.
Yeah. I guess for like portability reasons, that would be rough because then you would have like half a game install on there. If you did like exactly what we did, which is just move our drive over from one.
Yeah.
From an old console to a new one. That wouldn't work so well.
Even still, I would still want to have, just tell me like, hey, it a game happens in whole chunks, right? Like it just does it because like now I'm going to have one that is, I think when I put it in the PS5, the first time my PS5 drive was already full. So it wasn't like it wasn't as big an issue for me, but now it's like, I have two empty drives and I was like, oh, am I just going to have one empty drive for a lot of this time or fill it up? You know, we keep a bunch of stuff. I know this isn't a problem a lot of people have, but keep a lot of stuff for, as people might know, playing a game over the course of 6 months or something for work, you just keep a lot of weird stuff on the drive. Maybe not the best way to play a game, but you know, once a week for 6 months. But let's go back to the technical stuff.
I mean, like that thing, from what I've seen, like that thing does what it says it's going to do. Like all three of those games I mentioned, Final Fantasy, Dragon's Dogma, and Alan Wake, like night and day difference in performance and sharpness and et cetera, et cetera. Like,
yeah.
Like those games look 4K-ish, you know, I'm not a pixel counter, I can't say exactly, but like Rebirth looks extremely sharp and runs extremely smooth, which is exactly what you want. Dogma? Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, Dragon's Dogma is the one I'm actually really curious
about.
Yeah,
I was shocked at that one, actually, because I didn't expect as much from that one, but that one is getting into like PC territory in terms of the graphical settings that you're setting.
Okay.
Because it's like, do you want the frame rate capped or unlocked? Do you want, like, they're full on exposing, like, you know, PSSR is their DLSS equivalent.
Yeah.
And you know what the settings are like on PC for that. It's like Do you want quality? Do you want balance? Do you want performance? Like, they are exposing settings like that for PSSR on stuff like Dragon's Dogma now. So it's like, for people who don't keep up with what all this technical stuff means, it's actually kind of a lot to go to the graphics tab in a game like Dragon's Dogma and be like, well, what settings do I want? I don't know. Like, what does all this mean? Like, they have tooltips, you know, but at any rate, like, I think I maxed everything in Dragon's Dogma except for PSSR. I put the balanced rather than quality.
Okay.
Still looked extremely sharp and was running at like a basically 60 everywhere I ran
around. That's cool.
It looked like
that's good.
And with ray tracing on and everything, like it's doing the thing. Like Alan Wake, super smooth, looked very good.
The only thing I downloaded and tried out was Outlaws. And I can't even remember if that, I think it was on that list. I know it's getting its update at the end of the month.
Yeah, I don't, is the graphics patch out for that yet? I'm not sure.
I assume since it was on that list that it was.
Yeah, like, you're right. It did say at launch, didn't it?
Yeah, it said at launch, but so I booted it up, but I didn't go back to my PS5 to double check exactly what had changed on it. But it did seem to be running at 60. I'm not a technical person when it comes to that stuff. I'm somebody who does play in quality mode and then is like, I'll try performance mode and be like, oh, this is much smoother. I can't go back to the other one. But, you know, I booted it up and then I just, and most of the stuff I'm playing right now, I'm playing on other places like the PC. So,
sure.
I'll wait for that big patch to come out for Outlaws.
That's why I hadn't booted that up yet. I've kind of like run it through its paces more as a proof of concept so far than like digging deeply into any game I'm actually going to play through at the moment. But, trying to think what else, like that Dead Rising remaster that just came out.
Yeah,
got a patch that I wasn't expecting. I don't think that was on the list.
They put out a big
patch that adds a bunch of ray tracing in that, which is nice in the mall.
Oh,
like,
okay.
Because you know, there's tons of like plate glass and
sure
shiny floors and stuff in the mall that is quite noticeable. Trying to think what else, like that. Those are the big like kind of tech showpieces that I've messed with so far.
Comes installed with Astro, right? Not the new Astro.
Yeah,
the,
it's got
Playroom.
Playroom, just like, yeah. Astrobot, I don't know if we mentioned that last week. Astrobot, like, maybe a conspicuous omission from that list of games with enhancements, but also, like, what do you do to that game?
Better.
Like, that game, that game, like, looks basically, like, beyond reproach already. Like, what else can you do to it?
Yeah, I wish I had something else. Maybe that Alan Wake DLC, but I have that. I played that on the PC, so like I don't have anything really too much. It's Outlaws really is my PS5 thing that I'll get back to when that thing gets patched. Baldur's Gate 3 I have on PC and PS5, so I guess I could boot that up and I think that was on the list as well. I think
so. Yeah, I mean, it really seems like this thing only makes sense if you're willing to go kind of all in on PlayStation as the place you play even all the multi-platform stuff, because otherwise, why not just play it on a PC?
Yeah, for sure. I'll be curious as we go on, and if there is any kind of bifurcation of, like, we're talking about a game, be like, it runs really well here, and there's PS5 people who are just like, it actually does not run super great.
Yeah, that has happened in basically every case where a company has split their install base like this, so yeah. I'm kind of expecting that, unfortunately. Maybe they'll be better about it this time. I don't know.
What are you doing with your PS5?
I don't know. I haven't decided yet.
So you took the extra memory out of that and put it into the new one?
Yeah.
Okay. I got a new one. This PS5, I think I'm going to do Office and Den for a while, PS5.
That's not a bad idea to have one at the desk, but that thing is so big, I actually don't really have a place to put it in here.
I just don't know which one I'm going to keep where, because if I'm doing something for work, I'm probably going to bring the Pro in here.
Yeah. It's small, I should say. Like,
it is slim.
I've never seen the slim, like the quote-unquote regular slim in person. This thing, from what I've seen, is not that much bigger than that. Making it as small as they did is what leads to the noise being shitty. Because the bigger it is, the less fan it needs. But it is surprisingly kind of svelte for how powerful it is.
I am excited to put it through its paces when there's a game I'm excited to jump back. Probably Star Wars will be the one to spend more time in it. And I'm also, like, I'm not a huge fan. A person with the noise, but it does annoy me a bit too. Like you said, you turn this thing on, you just paid a bunch of money for it, and you're
that's really why we're harping on it so much. It's like, again, this is supposed to be the nicest console ever made.
Yeah. It's just a little disappointing.
It's very disappointing that that they cheaped out on this. And but, again, like I could handle white noise, you know, just like the sound of air blowing is one thing. That's fine. But again, it's this kind of like mechanical, like grindy sound to it that really gets on your nerves.
But I have had to replace those little fans before. I just feel like whatever tech we're using for those little fans, and this sounds like maybe it's a little bit bigger. On my Switch, I had to do it. I've got these, I've got the capture device here. I've got to redo it. It's getting to that like,
Maybe they should have liquid cooled this thing.
Maybe.
Is that a viable option for like console hardware these days?
100%.
You're not going to do it cheap.
Like you can, well, I mean, yeah, it would have either added costs, to the,
that was more my question.
Passed on to the end user, or depending on what you believe about how big their profit margins are on this thing, they maybe could have just sold it at a slightly lower margin.
Is there any word on their profit margin on this? It seems like it's probably expensive. You see
people like kind of, what is the term? People like outrage merchants, you know, like you see the types of people on YouTube that just like to scream about things a lot, throwing numbers around like, oh, they're making $300 per unit, which I highly doubt, but I have seen that kind of nonsense going around. But no, I don't think anybody knows exactly what they're making, but anyway, yeah, like theoretically they could have done something like that. I'm mostly being facetious though.
So I think my stance hasn't changed. I'm sure yours is probably similar. I think you just reiterated again. Yeah. Like if you are all in on a PlayStation 5 ecosystem, or this is your first PlayStation 5, this might be the good choice for you. Otherwise, it still feels like a luxury upgrade for not a lot of great reason right now.
There are people in that category. I think like I see a lot of people saying like, oh, well, if you get a PC, you can do a lot more with a PC than just play games, which is absolutely true. But there are a lot of people who don't want a PC these days. Like the desktop market is not
always
huge.
Been the case.
And particularly like so many people just use phones and laptops now and don't want any bigger computer in their life than that. So like this does make sense for that category.
Can't relate.
No, I'm with you. I will fucking bury me with my tower, bury with me with my full ATX case. I'm with you, but
I go back and forth on both. They both have their advantages, but though I'm leaning towards PC now, mostly because generation after generation, my PC games are still in one place on mostly Steam, I should say.
Yeah.
And I don't have to haul out an old console if I need, and it's a work thing. I mentioned on the Q&A we did, I don't play a lot of old games, but it's either work or for the kids. And sometimes it's like, hey, this thing's on a PS4. Am I really going to haul out the PS4 to go play this thing? Probably not.
Yeah. Probably not. Yeah. There's one other element I've been thinking about with this a lot recently, which is that like another reason I lean toward still playing a lot of games on consoles, even though I have a good PC, is that, how can I put this? Like relative to the platform, you know, you're getting the best possible experience
like very finely tuned.
Yes, exactly. Like typically development flows from consoles down to PC, and PC is where the porting issues happen, right? Like shader stutter or whatever other million bugs can arise with ports, you know, like the console being a fixed platform and being the thing they focus on first, like, you know, you're going to get pretty much an ideal experience relative to what that platform can do.
Hopefully, fingers crossed.
I mean, obviously,
especially first party, but yes.
Like obviously plenty of console games have issues at launch too. Like that's not universal, but like by and large, you can kind of assume that you're going to get the smoothest experience there.
The optimized experience, right?
Yes.
And again, especially first party stuff who understand the ins and out and get all the support for how the thing works. Looking at you, Naughty Dog. Those guys know how to make a game on a Sony console, you know? All right. That's the PS5 Pro. Probably more to talk about as games released for that. You know, I'll talk about when Indiana Jones comes out on my Sony PlayStation. Sure. What is that? That's next year? Is that early
for,
next year?
For PlayStation, that's next year. For Xbox, it's like a month from now.
Yeah. I will say we don't have it on any list to talk about, but I watched that gameplay reveal thing they did, whatever the newest Indiana Jones gameplay thing they had go up. I got me pretty excited for Indiana Jones. Not totally bought in yet, but I was like, okay, yes, this is a game I want to play and try out. And Troy Baker, I think you're doing a fine job with whatever they showed in that thing was fine for Indiana Jones. I was like, I get it. All right.
Yeah, I think he's getting the tone of it.
Yeah. And it got me more excited to get in there. So for a December release, I'm in.
Was there anything like new gameplay wise in there that got you going?
It just looked tighter, the whole thing. They showed kind of more of the adventuring in there.
Okay.
And I was like, okay, yeah, this seems neat.
Interesting. There was a discussion on our Discord recently about that. Maybe it was off that same footage. I haven't seen it yet, but that people were kind of saying like, maybe this is less of a first-person shooter and more of a like first-person adventure stealth type game. Like this, people are maybe looking at this from the wrong angle.
Yeah,
I mean, it's kind of what they said it was.
Yeah. But yeah. I think, you know, like Machine Games having just made a bunch of Wolfenstein games, which are full on shooters. Like maybe people are coming at it with that expectation wrongly.
Trust nobody.
I mean, anything, that makes me a little more excited because the shooting was never the best part of those Wolfenstein games.
Yeah, fully agree. which is why I hope like the whipping and stealth and adventure-y stuff is more of a focus here.
Give me some oomph on that.
Yeah, and puzzling. So give me some
good tomb puzzles.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. I say we take a quick break here. We come back and we dig into what we have played in any of their forms. So stick around. We'll be right back. This week's show is brought to you by Pretty Litter, Alex Navarro and Brad Shoemaker. Everything's got to go to the bathroom.
Yeah. That's just being alive.
That's why it's one. I'm sure that's some kind of definition of life. Things go to the bathroom in your house, right?
I mean, I do. I mean, that's not that weird. I go to the bathroom in my house. And yes, if you're referring to my animal friends, they also go to the bathroom in my house in the designated area.
I did not want to say it, but Alex Navarro, you and your cat friends both use a litter box.
Yes, I'm going to the bathroom right now, in fact.
Alex, what upgrades? What's modern tech in kitty litter? What do we got going on?
Well, what we have going on in the world of kitty litter is Pretty Litter, and Pretty Litter is a non-clumping litter that comes in a bag. You use it for a month. You put a bag in there for a month. Over the course of that, you will do some scooping, but you are meant to keep that litter in there for the duration of the month. And as you are going, you can look at the color coding of, let's just say, the urinary analysis of your pet, your cat.
Okay.
And you can at least get some indicators about how your cat's, you know, overall health might be.
Well, Alex, Pretty Litter sounds pretty amazing. And if you want to try it out, you can go to prettylitter.com/nextlander to save 20% off your first order and get a free cat toy. Could things get any better? That's prettylitter.com/nextlander to save 20% off your first order and get a free cat toy. prettylitter.com/nextlander. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details. Thanks, Pretty Litter. All right, we are back, and if I'm in a good mood, it's because I have spent my evening and my morning playing some Golden Idol, one of the best ways I can think of to spend my gaming time.
It's like the quintessential coffee game to me.
Oh,
it's the
so good.
It's the quiet morning. I'm just going to sit down with this slow paced, like a deductive puzzler.
Coffee and murder mystery.
Yeah, exactly. Just sit here with a cup of coffee and yeah.
So are you, Brad, you've played some, are you playing on the PC, with a mouse and keyboard?
Yeah. I'm just sitting. I was thinking though, I was playing it kind of late last night and I was like, I should like set up something at least to my laptop where I can sit on the couch and play this, which is a MacBook, you know, and then there's no Mac port of that I know of, but like, it's such a just mouse driven game. It feels like you could kind of stream it to whatever in your house and have a good time.
Plays pretty fine with a controller. Like,
you played with a controller.
I did. I played it. I played it through my Moonlight setup, and I played it with the controller. I have about 9 hours in that thing now, and it was fun. I'm on the last chapter. I thought maybe I could get it done before we recorded today, but like the other Golden Idols games, the puzzles balloon as you go. Mm. So
it ramps up fast.
Yeah,
I'm only at the end of I was hoping to get through the first chapter before we got in here, but the inability to see after the eye doctor kind of threw that off. But the press conference outside the building, you remember that with the TV camera and that's what I'm on right now.
I remember it like it was yesterday.
Yes. Like even that one is like and help me remember, like, is there anything mechanically super different from Case of the Golden Idol?
It is a little different, actually. Okay.
But that game had multiple scenes per encounter, right? Like,
yes.
You would go in and out of rooms and...
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so, like, that's not really different here. But, like, even there, maybe it's like there's more police procedural work to this one that I've seen so far than, because the previous one was like set in like what, the 1700s or something.
Yeah.
This one is in the 1970s, and is it a fictional town? I think.
Yes.
Like I found that flag that looks like an American flag, but what is it, like the Allied States of Hesperia or something?
Oh, where it looks like a smushed pigeon on the wall, like yeah. the like their crest.
Yeah. I mean, it might as well be New York. I don't know what the actual city is, but it's been a lot of like looking at coroner's reports and looking at like corpses on tables and trying to match like, you know, toe tags to case names and.
Yeah.
I don't know. I assume that's not the entire game, but so far it's been pretty like dense with kind of police work detail.
So it's definitely not. And that's kind of what I thought it was going to be. It is not. It is much more varied in its vignettes. Like I thought, oh, you're going to take on the role of this detective throughout all these chapters. And you don't really.
Oh,
you just kind of, or at least it's not presented that way. Maybe you are on some meta level. Mechanically, it's very, very similar, though they have the UI is different. So they now kind of really split out much more explicitly the like nouns, verbs, and like adjectives.
Names. Yeah.
And they proper have like nouns. Yeah.
Different categories for like vehicles or
yes.
conference for like the press conference, like specific like subcategories of things where you need to fill in the terms.
Yeah, so they had a little bit of that, but it's much more pronounced here where you are doing like, yes, like sub cards that you're filling out to be like, okay, put all the, I mean, they had the thing where it's like, put all the people in a thing, but now, like you said, all right, fill out this card before we get onto the big kind of Mad Libs card that we need to fill out. So you get a couple of those, and mechanically, it works very similar, though I feel like I have more windows up at a time now than I did in the previous Golden Idol, or I might have like three or four panes up at a time to piece things together. But I really enjoy those games. I don't know if I love this vibe, just setting as much as I did on the original Golden Idol. The music is different. I really like the music in the first one quite a bit. The music is a little more laid back here. The kind of motif is a little different.
What kind of laid back are we talking?
Like not in your face, like very, very in the background.
Yeah. It's not like 70s cop movie music. No, or anything like that.
But in the first Golden Idol, like I can kind of still hear some of the music in my head. Like it's kind of memorable from those scenes.
Yeah. I kind of similarly feel the same about the, like the art style. Like this one's got, it's like, I guess technically 3D, you can see a little bit of depth yeah. on the characters, but like, it's got more of just kind of a generic hand-painted kind of look to it now.
I like it. Everything is gross. Everybody is grotesque.
I should distinguish between like art style, which is like how the characters' proportions are and stuff. Because yeah. that stuff's great. Like even like that second level with construction workers, like everybody is kind of a grotesque character.
Yeah.
With giant features and stuff. I meant more just the way everything is rendered, like the style of painting that they use. Because the previous game almost looked like something. I mean, it couldn't have been done on like an Amiga or something, yes. but it looked like from that era, you know,
like that CGA VGA.
Yeah. So it was like
graphics
pixelated and dithered in a way that really recalled like that early era of pixelated adventure games. And this looks fine, but it just feels the style is a little more generic to me.
They had moved slightly more in this direction with the expansions with more movement and more 3D stuff. But it's interesting. I'm still waiting. I'm in the last, what they purport to be the last chapter. Things are starting to pull together. I kind of thought this was going to be a little more of a bridge into modern day from the first one. Of like, hey, here's how we got here. Though so far it seems the story is more on its own thing that's happening in the 70s and beyond.
Yeah, I had seen the Steam page straight up describes it as a standalone sequel.
Yeah, so you know, you don't really have to know too much, though. You know, I would never say don't go play those first ones, but you can kind of just jump into this cold and pick up what's going on here. They reference the first one a little bit, but not in a way that you have to know what's going on. I really like it. I quite enjoy it, and it's hard for me to put down. Some like the first one, there are parts that feel a little tedious, and sometimes I do feel like I am just swapping things out to get it to click. You like kind of gaming the system a bit.
Yeah, I always feel bad when I like, because it tells you, it'll tell you if you have two or fewer errors, yeah. basically. And at that point, I really have to resist. Like, I'm just going to swap every name I have in here until it works. Because I want to deduce what, or I want to like get, yes,
you,
get
what you want to know why you should know. Yes.
Yeah, I want to get what their logic was. And sometimes that's not obvious.
So, for the most part though, it hasn't really been too difficult. There have been one or two spots I've gotten a little stuck on, but, nothing too obscure, especially the names and things. There are one or two color things in there where I was worried, but I was able to kind of make it through where it's just like, oh, okay. I have to look at like eye color here. And I'm not sure if people have green eyes or brown eyes. For people who don't know, just being colorblind, I wasn't quite sure. But for the most part, they're pretty good about just using bright primaries and stuff like that. I actually called my wife in and be like, no, it's either blue eyes or green eyes. Nobody has brown eyes in here. I was like, great. Okay, good. Then I can make this puzzle work. But there, some scenes, it do get overwhelming when you open it up. You're like, oh, good Lord.
It's a lot.
Oh, my gosh. There's so many. This is going to be a lot.
It's a lot, and it almost makes me wish there was like some intermediate layer of like a notebook or something, because like there's a lot of spots like on that one I'm on right now. It's like, well, I got to go back into the police guy's office to look at the thing in the trash can again. Now I got to go back outside and then go back into the morgue so I can check the bodies on the thing again. I have to keep going back and forth, you know, like something that's annotated. I don't know, like a condensed list of the information you found a little bit more centrally.
So what I did, it's interesting because the UI is mostly full screen with some icons on the bottom now. And in the previous game, I feel like it was a little more, you see the verbs and the words present. And I would sort the words in the first one to make sense. I would basically take my notes by grouping. And you could do that in this one. You could group the words however you want. But I don't do that on this one as much because there are so many panels that pop up. And they do split them out mostly now on their own and do kind of the word separation in a way that makes sense.
Yeah. I don't think the first game had this. I have to give it up for this very small like user interface thing they did here, because like you said, it's all like floating windows now. You can straight up drag them around like they're like you're in Windows or whatever, you know, like a GUI. But they have a single button toggle for hide every window.
Yes.
And then just hit it again and they all pop back up exactly where you left them. So you can, it's very easy to just like minimize, but you're essentially minimizing all of the gameplay so you can refer back to the scene really easily. So that's super helpful.
And that's mapped on the controller as well. You just push a button and it just disappears. So yeah, I like it a lot. After this, I'm probably going to finish it up after I edit the podcast and hopefully get through it. I can't wait to play whatever more goal. This has not soured me on it. It is very good. I don't think it's quite grabbing me as much. I mean, I really love that first series of games, but I think the setting for those was a little more mystical.
Yeah, you know, for like sure. Absolutely. They must be really confident in this one. Did you look at the season pass on Steam?
No.
I think they've got 5 DLCs planned.
Oh, that's amazing.
Or maybe 4. Like, it's a lot.
You can get a season pass?
The deluxe edition comes with a thing that just gets you all the DLCs as they come out.
Oh, wow.
But they have a lot of them planned, so they must be feeling pretty good about the chances of success on this.
And there are a decent amount of vignettes in this. At least, let's say there's like at least 3 chapters, if not more. And there are like 4 vignettes, I think, in each one. So you're chewing through a lot there.
Yeah.
And the presentation is very nice. I have to see where all the story stuff goes. So far, it's fairly interesting, and it's told in a mostly nonlinear fashion. So you're kind of like, what is going on here? And then you do the next one, like, oh,
yeah. Okay. I don't know. I can't remember if the last one had this, but the sort of higher level story that you're filling out inside a chapter between scenarios,
yes,
is cool. Like that kind of helps you get a sense.
That's more present in this one. This one, yeah, this one has a like, yes, that wasn't as big, or even I'm trying to think in the DLCs if they had it, but yes, this one has like a per chapter story that you then come back to fill out based on the vignettes in the chapter.
Yeah, that's nice to get just a big summary of everything going on and how it ties together.
Have you hit anything where you like finish the chapter and you're like, I didn't really realize that's quite what was happening there when you read the kind of description, or you've been following mostly?
I haven't filled in quite enough of it yet to have that level of depth to it, I don't think.
Very cool. It is available. I have not seen it on anywhere else but the PC yet, but it is pretty much available everywhere. It's on iOS too. Apparently, I haven't seen it there. I should see how. I haven't looked up the price on iOS. It's $20 on the PC. I'm playing it on Steam. But it's on Switch and PlayStation, wherever you are. I wonder if it's $20 on iOS, because it could be a cool iOS game.
Hard to say. It is free and offers in-app purchases on iOS. So,
weird.
I don't have the price in front of me.
And that's for Rise?
Yeah. I mean, that's very typical on iOS. That would basically just be like you get to play 10 minutes of it for free and then pay to unlock the full thing or something. Wait a minute. Hang on. It's published by Netflix. So I wonder if you have to sign up for Netflix. Netflix membership required.
Okay. Well,
so there you go.
Well, there you go. I paid my $20 for it and playing it on the PC, really enjoying it. Rise of the Golden Idol. Rise from your Golden Idol. Rise of the Golden Idol. I'm glad to hear they have a content plan as well. I will play more of those games. Let's see. What else here? Alex.
Yeah.
We have talked so much. Our year of Tetris.
Yeah, it's the year of Tetris. I don't know if you heard that.
But still, there's more Tetris to talk about. Tetris is forever.
Yeah, Digital Eclipse getting in on the game here, deciding to make some Tetris, specifically some very old Tetris, the history of Tetris. They were doing their Gold Master treatment to Tetris. Tetris forever.
So the last Gold Master series I played, and I think it's the last official release, was the Jeff Minter LlamaSoft one. And that one didn't grab me. I mean, look, even if they're not my favorite, doesn't mean they're terrible. But that one didn't grab me as much as this one. And I don't think it grabbed you as much either, right?
No, it didn't. My problem with that one was it felt like once they started getting to the really interesting stuff about like his split with Atari and whatever, like it just kind of ran. They just stopped talking about the history, and that was a little weird. This doesn't have that problem. I mean, I haven't gone through the entirety of the historical, tour aspect of the game, but I've gone through the first few. And what I have found is there are definitely not as many talking heads that are not specifically Tetris related as maybe something like Atari 50 or something like that. But, it's Pizhitnov, it's Hank Rogers, it's Maya Rogers, it's a handful of other people. And in the early goings, it's a lot of Alexei Pizhitnov. And the main thing I've taken away from it is I would really like to be friends with Alexei Pizhitnov. He seems like a really lovable dude.
How much of it? Because I haven't really seen much of it. How much of the documentary or talking head stuff is archival, or how much was done for the game?
It seems like it's all new.
Oh, awesome!
Great. Yeah, it's new interviews.
I saw them saying they have hours of interviews with those two guys.
Cool.
Yeah, in particular. Specifically with Hank and Pizhitnov, it seems like they have a ton of material. There are obviously some people that are factors in this, like a Robert Stein that is no longer with us. But they do have archival photos of him, and they do talk about him in much the same way that they do in that document, that BBC documentary that we watched.
Was he the one who was originally went out and found it? And
yes.
He was who plays him in the Tetris movie?
Toby Jones.
Toby Jones. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what makes me want to check this out. I mean, on top of the Gold Master games being cool and Tetris being great, of course, is having had the Tetris movie for the Watchcast and looked at that BBC document, we have seen these figures represented in different ways a lot recently. So to see them in particular, like seeing Hank Rogers just give extended interviews would be cool. Is he really as much of a cowboy cut up as he is portrayed in that movie? Or, obviously in an interview setting, you're probably a little more straight laced, but
he seems really kind of ebullient and charming. That is the vibe I get from him talking on this stuff. It is funny that they don't mention that Maya Rogers is his daughter, or at least not in any of the stuff that I've gotten to so far. It's very much she's the one in charge of the Tetris company, and they kind of leave it at that. But nonetheless, I think the interview stuff is good. If you have seen the Tetris movie or watched any other historical stuff about Tetris, I'm not sure that there is a great deal, at least in the early goings, of new information that you wouldn't have gleaned elsewhere. There's a little bit more about the programmer that Pizhitnov passed the game off to get the first DOS version of that game running, and sort of the history of that guy. And, he was some teenage programming prodigy that just walked in one day and was I can do this, and then gave him a port in a week. But most of the interview stuff covers a lot of the same ground. It's not uninteresting, and especially if you haven't dug deep into any of this stuff before, it feels like it's hitting the stuff you would want to hear about. I have a couple of minor quibbles about what I've played so far of it, though. One, they don't have my version of Tetris, which is the Windows version of Tetris, like the Windows 95 version that I kind of grew up playing. But they do have a lot of historical Tetris in there, like including a representation of what the first version of it would have looked like on the hardware that Pajitnov programmed it on.
Is that a Mike Micah special, or do you know if that's like a, hey, here's what we thought. Does he have one of those ones that he's like, I went in and I made my own Tetris in here?
I don't know the exact provenance of how it was developed. I know it is not a straight port of whatever that hardware was. I imagine because finding one of those machines to work off of is probably fairly difficult. In fact, one of the ones they show as a like museum artifact, he's like, this isn't even the one I use. This is like the model after it, because you just can't find the ones I used around anywhere.
Electronica 60 is the computer he developed it on. Yeah, like there was a Soviet computer exhibit at the Vintage Computer Festival that I went to recently, and they didn't even have one of those there. Like, I don't know how rare that computer is, but even the exhibit of Soviet computers did not have that computer.
He described it as very flimsy and not the most reliable machine to work off of. So I have to imagine a lot of the ones that did exist just broke at some point.
Yeah. So to be clear, the version of original Tetris in this is recreated then?
I believe it is recreated. Yes.
Okay. Interesting.
I can deal with the fact that my one specific model of Tetris is not in here, because there's like 20 different ones in here, including most of the ones that I think most people would want to play.
Yeah. Do you know which one that is? I'm not familiar with that Tetris.
The Windows 95 one?
Yeah, I don't know, is the thing. I don't know where that one came from. It was I inherited that computer from my dad. It also it might have been the Windows 3.1 version, actually, now that I'm thinking about it.
Could it be Microsoft Tetris for Windows?
It may have been.
I've never heard of this before, but it looks like that's totally a thing in the Windows 3.1 era.
Yeah, let me just look that up, because I will know it instantly by the graphics. What did you say it was called?
I am playing it as we speak on archive.org.
Okay. I guess I could find it then.
What is it? Tetris for Windows?
Microsoft Tetris for Windows version 2.0 is what this says.
Tetris for Windows 2.0. I just need to know. I will know it as soon as I look at it, if that is it. Yeah, that's it.
Okay.
That's the one.
All right. Yep. This is Tetris, all right.
That's part of the story, right? Is the licensing of Tetris and all the different various versions of Tetris?
Yeah, though this version would have come after a lot of that drama played out already. I imagine this was actually an officially licensed version, but they do talk about that, and they do talk about, like, you know, Stein running away with the game when he should not have and all that stuff. The only other quibble I have about it, I've only seen this in a few of the interview videos, but the editing feels a little choppy. Especially sometimes the cutoffs for the end of the, like, you know, the interview video, it feels like they fade down before a person has finished talking. I've seen that happen a couple of times. It's possible that, like, that person immediately transferred into another sentence that they were trying to cut off, but it just feels a little sloppier than I'm maybe used to with some of these edits.
Like, just not as elegant as maybe
it's
it
just not
be.
As elegant. Yeah. Mm. So I don't know.
Drew Scanlon is not there anymore. I don't know what to tell you. Like,
I mean, I think the real thing, I'm coming away with this because I'm looking at how much stuff is in here and how many Tetrises there are and all that. It definitely feels less substantial than certainly like Atari 50 does.
Really?
It is more substantial, I would say, than something like the Jordan Mechner one, where there is, you know, like a fair amount of, you know, it's all kind of hyper-focused on one game and in sort of like the early goings of Mechner's career and all that kind of stuff.
I really like that one.
Yeah, no, that one was good. I think the interviews here are good. I think the number of Tetrises is reasonable. I just don't think it's like, it's definitely not, doesn't feel like the most fleshed out one of these that I have played. I have not finished it, but it also doesn't feel like they are specifically trying to glide around specific parts of any history of this. Like, it seems like they're being open about the whole thing.
Outside of the interview footage, are there a lot of like hard copy materials, like contracts, business cards, just marketing brochures, like that? That was one of the things in Atari 50 I enjoyed a lot, is like seeing actual documents from the time and like Nolan Bushnell's business card and stuff like that.
So there's less of that. There is some of that in there for sure, but there's like, if I remember correctly, I think there is at least one piece of paper that just Pajitnov holds up during one of his interviews, like, look, this is an original thing that I was doing some stuff with. There is that stuff. There is not as much of it as maybe you would like.
Like the scanned materials?
Yeah, like scanned stuff, basically.
Yeah, I still want to check it out.
Yeah, me too.
I think there is it's just a fascination with Tetris, especially, you know, since it's been in the media so much.
Yeah. And anywhere you can play Tetris, you should play Tetris, you know?
It's the eternal game.
Yeah.
Did you play Battle Guy Den?
I did not get to Battle Guy Den. I did try out that Go game, I think, that that Hank Rogers was working on, the one that kind of got him in good with Yamauchi. Oh,
interesting.
Yeah. That's in there?
I think that, yeah.
They have a Nintendo's Tetris in there?
They do, yeah. They definitely have the NES? I think they have the Game Boy version in there.
NES okay. Tetris? Interesting.
Yeah. I think they also, I skipped over some of the ones I was like super familiar with, like the NES and the Game Boy ones, but I think they're both in there.
Okay. Yeah, hey, I was always, you know, some of that early licensing stuff seems like it might be difficult, but I don't know if it would be. Yeah, I'll definitely check it out when I get a chance.
I'm looking at the full game list right now. I just want to make sure I have this correct. Let's see here. It has Electronica 60, MS-DOS, Apple II, the Go game for Famicom, mm-hmm. As I said, Hattress, yes, NES Tetris, or is NES?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they don't have the NES version.
Yeah, I
thought
say
I saw that
one,
in there.
That one, I would guess, is like,
Maybe because I didn't play it. I know that. I thought I was skipped over a thing that said play this, but maybe I didn't.
It, Hattress is the only NES and Game Boy game in there.
Wow, that's a little weird to me.
Well, actually, sorry. This table has it broken out. Famicom is a separate column. It does say Famicom Tetris is in there.
Okay, so that's probably
probably the same thing, I would assume.
Yeah, I don't think they're different between Famicom and NES.
Okay, but no Game Boy?
Hattress apparently is, because there is a Famicom and NES and a Game Boy version of it.
Game Boy Tetris is not in here.
No,
shockingly.
It is not.
That is kind of shocking.
That, well, I don't understand at all.
Again, maybe there's Nintendo of America licensing stuff or Nintendo licensing stuff that got weird.
Did you try out Tetris Time Warp, that new game they made? Is that just a multiplayer-only game?
I have not tried that out yet, because I usually try and play these things somewhat in order, and yeah. I've not gotten the last chapter yet, but I have not tried that out yet.
That might be mainly a multiplayer thing. Like, Battle Tetris is the same thing. Like, there's kind of not a ton of reason to play that by yourself. I mean, you could.
But no online, right?
Sadly, no online. Yeah, I think second time I've said this week, if they had like true online multiplayer Tetris Battle Gaiden, like it would be over. That would be game of the year.
I mean, Tetris Battle Gaiden is in there, but you can't play online.
I'll play with the kids. That'll be fun.
Yeah.
That is Tetris Forever, $35, pretty much available across the board there.
I have a feeling, and maybe I'm off base here. I kind of feel like maybe they're making too many of these too fast.
Like, spend more time with one?
Yeah, it feel like the last couple have felt just a little light compared to what they kind of did in those first two. And I'm maybe wondering if maybe there's a little too much pressure to try and get these out on a regular cadence.
That Atari one was a real banger.
It was, yeah. Like,
they're never going to top that, is the thing.
They really went for it on that one, and it's, yes. And that's a whole company, to be fair.
Yeah.
Like, that's most of everything else they've done is all around one game or one developer or whatever, right? Like, that one is like not just a whole company, but it's kind of the whole company.
What a story.
And they
went
back to it. They added more later on.
Yeah, like, there's just so much more material to work with there.
I think there's stuff you could do, but it's probably a minefield. Like a Midway would be a good one. You know, I think you can get some good arcade stuff. And
there's so much they could do. It's just that I don't want them to do it if they're having to get these out on like a 9 to 12 month cadence.
Yeah, when Atari 50 came out, my assumption was, okay, if they do more of these, they're going to do companies. You know, like, oh, they'll do one for Capcom, or like, who you name it, who would be like
Konami,
but I kind of assumed it would take the form of one per company, not necessarily like one per game or developer.
I like, there are some like non-existent companies anymore that I feel like could still be fun to go through
if you can untangle where the rights are,
and those are the ones I feel like that are I want to see, because that's the stuff I want scanned immediately.
Totally.
And archived and be like, no, go let's go tell the story on this thing now.
Speaking of getting John Drake on the phone, I don't know why this just popped into my head, but I feel like a LucasArts one of these would be incredible.
Oh, that
would
be
very cool.
Like, and there's so
such
many
a softball toss.
So many like and like very interesting developers still who are still all around that work at LucasArts.
Also, like a great promotional piece because I think you know they want to make more Star Wars stuff and they want to make more games.
And now is a great time to be seeking this stuff out because, like you said, a lot of those developers are still around and there aren't necessarily that many more years where that will be the case.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Yes.
I'm not trying to be grim. I'm just saying the time of March of Time comes for us all, you know?
Yes. I was just thinking we have some stories later on where, you never know. Time is a fickle.
Time keeps on slipping into the future, or so I'm told.
Yes. Tetris Forever. $35 available pretty much wherever you play them video games.
Yeah, I'll just end that real saying I don't regret buying it. Like I'm glad I have it. It's a fun little historical journey. It's just just a little worried about what they're doing with these now.
I'm excited to still jump into it and check it out. Brad, kind of quickly here before we kind of get into the scooping up stuff, Battle Aces.
Yeah, Battle Aces came back in beta just in time.
Okay.
Like literally like the day after the election, I was like, oh good, I need something to dump my spare brain cycles into so I can't think about anything else.
So remind the folks what Battle Ace is, where it fits into the RTS ecosystem.
I forget who ran this headline talking about this beta coming back where they just described it as streamlined StarCraft 2, and I'm like, oh, of course. Like, sure. That's all you have to say.
Yeah, there you go.
It plays a lot like StarCraft 2, but the matches are 10 minutes, and like you don't have to manage a lot of the shit that you sold.
No single player.
No single player. It is a free-to-play, purely online, head-to-head, condensed StarCraft that I like very much. This new beta, I think you can just go sign up and get into it now. They have a sign-up on their site, and it didn't seem like it was a, hey, maybe we'll pick you. It kind of seemed like, hey, if you sign up, we'll just send you a code.
When you got back into it, did it still have your profile? So
I don't even know if it was a beta I was in earlier this year, or it might have been more of an alpha. There was like no progression in it earlier this year.
Okay.
And so now there is a full on profile. You're earning XP. You've got they've got their kind of battle pass equivalent in there. It's all still free. You can't put money into it right now.
But you were getting some units, right? For basically playing through. You were unlocking.
You were earning currency in that first test back in the summer. But even then, at a certain point, they jacked up the rate that you would get currency times like 1,000.
Oh.
Like they were just like, hey, we just want you to try every unit as fast as possible. Here you go.
Okay. Okay. So does it seem any different?
This is much more feeling more or less like probably what the chipping game is going to be now in terms of how fast you earn currency and like what the cosmetics are and what the business model is. Like it's becoming pretty clear that pretty much all the monetized stuff is going to be cosmetic in this from what I can tell.
Okay.
So that's like, obvious stuff like colors and skins and like banners for your profile, but there's also stuff like what kind of explosion or animation do you want when one of your bases gets blown up?
Interesting.
Like,
all
you
right.
can unlock stuff like there's only two in there. There's a basic explosion, and then there's one that's like an emergency warp out where your base like warps out Protoss style rather than blowing up at the last second.
Sure.
So like a lot of cosmetic stuff like that. My favorite one is spray paints, like sprays, like Counter-Strike style.
How do you deploy those?
Like anywhere, you just hit the button and then click, and it spray paints like on your opponent's base.
I'm taking the fun out of it, but is there any advantage to like visually? Does your opponent see it? I assume because otherwise,
Absolutely.
Is there any advantage to like obscuring something, like hiding a unit spray paint?
Like it just goes on the ground. Also, it's on a cooldown. You can only use it once every so often.
Okay,
so it's more. It feels a little passive aggressive.
Yeah, what
honestly,
what kind of decals do you have?
Because the
like middle fingers. What are we talking about?
No. Here? It's mostly like units in the game. It's like King Crab, which is the giant Ultralisk type unit, or like Wasp Rush is another one because that's your Zergling Rush. The one I'm using though is just a GG, like an animated GG.
Oh wow, because animated.
There's no voice chat or not voice chat. Sorry, there's no text chat. Like you can't type GG like you could in StarCraft. And they have emotes in there, like text emotes that are just like aces never surrender or better luck next time. Like
I say,
there's not even a good game in those text emotes because it's hiding in the spray paint.
Nice. So,
as soon as I unlocked it, and it's like a light up, like when you slap the GG down, like the G's like light up back and forth and stuff. It feels like
they know what they're doing.
I don't know. It's all in good fun, I guess.
I mean, the matches are what, 10, 15 minutes?
Yeah. I most of my matches barely go to 5 minutes, if that.
Okay. Yeah. It's like, but the investment's not so bad.
Yeah, it's not huge. This is very much a, I'll just play one more. That one sucked, but whatever. Yeah. Let's just move on. Like, the investment is very low, but I don't know. I only ever think to slap the spray paint down when I'm, like, wrecking their main. You know, like, when the match is 30 seconds from ending.
So yeah, yeah.
I know they are sitting there staring. I just never think about it otherwise because you're too busy.
Oh, so you use it when you're winning. I thought we'd only use it when you're about to bail out or...
No, no. Well, you can use it anywhere, but you have to... You kind of have to hope your opponent is looking where on the map you slap it down.
Yeah. Which is largely... Does it ping the map when they use it?
I don't think so.
Okay.
But that's largely why I only think to use it when I'm in the middle of wrecking their main base.
Have you seen other people use it?
A little bit, yeah.
All right.
Yeah. So, like, I hope... Like, when I say GG on the ground with the spray paint, I mean it sincerely, but I wonder if some people are taking it as, like, rubbing it in or something.
And you've been able to get into plenty of matches?
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's even I've been playing a lot of 2v2, actually, this round of beta and having a lot of fun with it, and even the 2v2 matches get in like, 10, 15 seconds.
Cool.
I don't know how far off from actual release this is. And, like, the Battle Pass track is, it's got a premium tier, you know, where, like, most of the cosmetics are premium. Mm-hmm. So you're gonna have to pay to unlock, like, the premium battle pass to get most of the cosmetics, it looks like. But it seems like you unlock currency fast enough to just buy the unit types if they don't change that before launch. So seems like pretty friendly from a monetization standpoint.
And I'm assuming I played a little bit of the early stuff, but you played much more along with the unit types. Are early units still viable later? It's just a balancing act.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause you can only have 8 units in your deck.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, they all have to have some amount of, like, late game utility.
Okay. So it's not like you're waiting to unlock the bigger units and just putting all of those in your deck. You still want the smaller, cheaper units.
Yeah, it definitely helps, especially because, like, I find that I'm ending up with tons of money toward the end of the match because you're mostly gas limited. It's like minerals and gas, just like StarCraft. All the higher tech is gas limited. Like, especially when I'm ahead, I'm just like, oh my God, I have 2,000 minerals. I need to spend these. And it's just like, hold down the Q key and just spew out a bunch of scorpions because that's your basic unit.
And I don't remember. Do you have a unit cap per unit type or is it a global unit cap?
No, it's like a 200 supply cap, just like StarCraft. Actually, okay. the other thing I just thought of that they've put in here now is kind of a rock, paper, scissors indicator of what each unit is good at, which is super helpful.
In, like, the mouse over or on the...
Yeah, when you're putting your deck... Oh, you can also see it in game, and you can look at your opponents as well.
Oh, that's cool.
They didn't have any of those tooltips in the first beta, so that's hugely helpful for figuring stuff out. And, like, the types are small, big, anti-big. So, like, there's a unit that is good at taking down the big, heavy units.
Sure.
So, like, oh, this flying unit is very good at... You can shoot down, like, the big, heavy tanks and... Stuff like that very quickly. And Splash, I think, is the fourth one. And there's just a little like round flow chart of, like, you know, anti-big is good against big, is good against small, is good against splash, whatever.
What about, there's no just like dedicated anti-air?
There is, yeah, but that's a different category because some anti-air would be better at certain things than others.
Okay. So you can be anti-air and anti-small.
Yeah, that totally. Okay. There's a separate in the mouse over. There's a separate thing that says hits ground, hits air, hits ground plus air.
Sure.
Okay. So that stuff has been really helpful for getting your head around the meta. I am very into this game, and I hope it's on the fast track to coming out for real.
Battle Aces still no official release date. Yeah.
Yeah. Not yet. But like I said, you can just go to their site and sign up for the beta now.
And the plan is still free to play with some cosmetics.
Yeah.
Cool. All right, that's Battle Aces. We got Rise of the Golden Idol, Tetris Forever. You know, the rest of that's in my grab bag here is Silent Hill 2, Dragon Age, and Life is Strange Double Exposure. I'm just chewing through those. And I'll just say, as a group, I am enjoying them the more I play of them. They're a lot, oftentimes here, I feel like in this year, the more I get into something that kind of wears thin because it takes too long. Maybe that'll happen with Dragon Age. I've heard it probably happens with Life is Strange Double Exposure. Man, everybody talks about those. The way that one wraps up, it makes me even more curious to finish that one and wrap it up. But I, so far, am enjoying them, and I can't wait to see what happens there. And Silent Hill 2! Streamed more of it recently, and still, I think the performances and in that are punching above its weight.
That sounds like kind of a dark horse, like, oh, this is actually maybe, like... I don't want to say like one of the best games of the year necessarily, but like people seem pretty stoked on it. I feel like I should try it.
Definitely give it a try. Like I really think the voice actors and actresses they got for it do a really great job conveying whatever the hell's going on in Silent Hill 2. For as much nonsense as in there, you're like, all right, yeah, it's like not, this is not a goofy fucking thing to goof on. This is like a pretty good portrayal here. So yeah, Silent Hill 2, pretty good. And Dragon Age and Life is Strange in that little group. We're going to take another break here. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about the news, which there is some news here. You can hear all about it right after this break. All right, we are back, and it is time for the news. And we just took a little break here, a little 5-minute break. I went inside. My son was back from school, and he said to me, "Father, did you know that they have announced the date for the Switch 2?
What?
I said, "Son, that is patently false."
Is your son a Mennonite?
And I said,
"Is that why he's just dressing you this way?"
And he said, "Father, it was on my friend's feed when we went to go look at something on his Switch." And I said, "Your friend is a liar, and so are you. Go milk the goats, son."
And raise a barn or something. I don't know.
"Hast thou made covenant with the Switch?"
So,
"Wouldst thou like to switch deliciously?"
Yo, Switch is the goat. I said, "Just do me a favor. I was just at my computer like 2 minutes ago. We have a story about the Switch 2. It would be very funny if they did announce a Switch date because we were just looking this up in the news." He looked. He could not find anything. I believe there is no Switch 2 date announced. Wait, but
what was the date he thought it was?
He did not know.
Okay.
Yeah. I said, but there is Switch news, Brad Shoemaker. There is some Switch news here, though it is not a date.
Misinformation is getting out of control.
You know, these kids, will it into existence.
Yeah. I'll have to rely on you for specific quotes and stuff here. I'm still,
sure, you got it.
Still
got
a little fuzzy,
here.
But
news.
But Nintendo, in the most Nintendo-like fashion ever, has revealed something like a major piece of information we've been waiting on about the Switch 2.
Hold on, this coming in. Beep, 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 beep.
In the most Nintendo-like fashion possible.
Is Furukawa.
At a, like, some kind of investor relations corporate messaging briefing is where they dropped the information that, yes, the Switch 2 is backwards compatible.
There you go.
I mean, it would have been, frankly, it'd be way bigger news if it was not. Like, that would really suck if they had chosen not to do that. But they could have chosen not to do that.
We kept saying was just that, you know, of course, they have to do this. They have to do this. But the reason we wouldn't ever let it go is because there's always just that one Nintendo factor every time. But it's not going to be this.
Yeah, I mean, Nintendo's got a decent track record with backwards compatibility, like GameCube to Switch, or sorry, not Switch, GameCube to Wii U. You know, there was some amount of continuity there, but they, just for business reasons, they totally could have just been like, nah, but they didn't.
Yeah.
We're going to get more information at a later date, kind of most of the rest of the Switch fantasy, or whatever you want to call it, whatever my son would, the rumor mail, whatever you want to call it.
Tell me about the Switch fantasy.
I can't.
Give me your Switch fantasy.
I would love to, but I will be arrested. I can't do it in this America.
You can. I think you're actually fine.
Maybe I'll get a cabinet position.
Yeah.
So yeah, the rest is still, what is it, fiscal year? End of its current fiscal year, March 31st, 2025.
They will announce it by the end of next March. I'm starting to feel pretty strongly like we're not going to see hide nor hair of that thing this year.
No.
Oh, yeah.
January at the earliest.
I'm kind of with you on that.
The time has passed.
And they never committed to putting it out in this fiscal year, did they?
No.
Just revealing it?
So revealing it.
Who knows? It could launch like later into next year or something.
I think if they can avoid that, they will, but you never know.
So the other thing that I'll just read the quote here. This is for Furukawa. At today's corporate management policy briefing, you know, the old CMPB, we announced that Nintendo Switch software will also be playable on the successor to Nintendo Switch. You're not allowed to say Switch 2. Do not say Switch 2.
It's illegal.
Also, the other bit of news here that I think we all pretty much assumed would be there. Nintendo Switch Online will be available on the successor to Nintendo Switch as well. Further information about the successor to Nintendo Switch, including its compatibility with Nintendo Switch, will be announced at a later date.
I do feel like the one place they may have screwed up is by not at least getting the name out by now, because Jesus. Constantly having to say successor to Nintendo Switch is just not good for anybody.
Unless they're going to call it successor, which is a pretty
that's not baller going name. To go well.
Give me that successor Switch. I want that successor Switch. Yeah, so I guess the big question mark here, I think we kind of assumed it would be backwards compatible. I think successor to Nintendo Switch is probably the move if you don't want to do brand confusion, calling it a Switch 2 and being like, it's not a Switch Pro, this is a whole other generational console. They're going to sell you Breath of the Wild again.
I still think maybe. Super Switch is in play.
Super Switch is cool. Super Switch would be all right. Maybe, oh, you don't want to be SS. Not in this.
Definitely not.
I don't know. Maybe in this climate, actually, you do. I don't know.
Maybe.
Don't obey in advance, they say.
So Brad, you're on the fence. You don't think they're going to give you a full $70 Breath of the Wild 4K?
I don't know. I mean, they could do that. They absolutely could do that.
Yeah.
They also could charge 10 or 15 bucks and just say, hey, pay this upgrade fee and you'll get a nice... quality.
That seems so not Nintendo, though.
Yeah.
That doesn't feel like the Nintendo I know.
Especially, I mean, they made quite a bit of money reselling Wii U games on the Switch this generation, but they had to there because that was a disc system and it was a different architecture. Like, they had to port those games and basically charge full price. Like, presumably here, they absolutely could, on a technical basis, just let you pay a $10 fee or whatever for an upgrade.
Especially if they're saying the Switch, Nintendo Switch Online will be there, so they will have your data and your purchases there.
Oh man, you just gave me the thought of like, what if you get the enhanced versions of things like Breath of the Wild? You just only get them while you're signed up to the online service.
Oh, Brad, why would you manifest that into this world?
You found the one thing.
I'm not endorsing any course of action. I'm merely here to caution against what may come.
Your 4K textures have been removed. Please sign back up.
That would suck so much.
Yeah, that wouldn't be great.
And that's why it's going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, I think we all can agree. They probably are not just going to offer free upgrades for...
No.
Sony did that for a while. Sony offered free upgrades
for a hot second, and then they instantly regretted it.
I mean, what was the last one they did?
Horizon, I think, was the last one.
Horizon was the last one that got an upgrade, right?
I think so.
Before they started charging. Even then, it was only $10, which, like, I don't know. It's not that bad in the grand scheme. Certainly better than paying full price.
I just wonder when even that stuff shows up. I feel like Nintendo's vibe is going to be, hey, you'll get a Breath of the Wild 4K or Tears of the Kingdom 4K in like 4 years. You know, like we're working on other stuff, and then we'll do this successor to the Switch version later. I'm going to call it that from now on, by the way. We're going to do this other version. I guess my other question here with this little bit of information is, how long do you think we get overlap with Switch and Switch successor games? You think this is a tight window where they move on almost immediately, or do we get like 6 months to a year of cross-platform?
I bet it's on the longer side for sure. I mean, the install base of the Switch is just so insane.
So this is a long on-ramp? We'll get releases on both for a bit?
As long as it takes.
I bet so. I wonder if there will be a single exclusive game at launch, actually.
See, if they don't do that, that'd be pretty rough. If it's not enhanced for whatever.
For sure. Well, I mean, I would guess it would at least be enhanced, but we're talking something that is built from the ground up purely for new hardware.
Yeah,
I don't know if there'll be anything like that at launch, because there's. I mean, we haven't hit 150 million Switches yet, right? But we're on the way.
There was the reporting in this article from Video Games Chronicle did reinforce that this is, I think, by the time the estimated Switch 2 comes out, it will be the longest in production console for Nintendo.
Yeah, I would believe that.
It's eighth year. In July, it surpassed the Famicom. No, I guess it surpassed the Famicom as Nintendo's console with the longest lifespan before being replaced. I guess in production is not the right word. Without a successor is probably
main console.
Yeah. All right. Get your Switch. I mean, that's also, we've been talking about this for so long, this isn't actually news, but this just kind of confirms that the Switch 2, the successor, will have a, again, not news here, feel free to nod along, a form factor and will be compatible with Switch stuff. Like, yeah. Because you wouldn't bring your old library stuff onto there if it didn't have Joy-Cons that function the same way and did all that other stuff, right? Yep. You'd have to make a lot of compromises. But we knew that already. All right, Xbox, not to be outdone. Switch says, yo, you like handheld games? You like your console games? Xbox says, yeah, maybe we'd do that. I don't know. We kind of need to figure out something, and then we'll do that. I don't know. Brad, this Phil Spencer getting out there and kind of, would you even call it a confirmation or just kind of
saying that'd be cool.
It's Phil Spencer basically being like, yeah, that'd be cool.
Yeah, he gave an interview to Bloomberg. I think this is like right up there with the Switch of like, okay, yes, of course they're doing this, but at least they've said it now. Like, they basically, Bloomberg asked him about handheld future Xbox devices, and he basically said, yeah, we're working on prototypes.
Yeah.
But I think he said they're a few years out, right?
Yeah, and just, it was pretty soft language, you know? Like, mostly like, yeah, look, we want to be where gamers are, you know, that thing.
Yeah.
So like, we want to be wherever people are playing games, that's where we want to be. So we gotta shore up our apps. We want to shore up this. We want to shore up that. And then, you know, a handheld thing. Why wouldn't we be doing that? Yeah. It was basically the tone.
Yeah, it's kind of basically like, yes, we're working on prototypes. We're learning through that process. So, like, I think he said it would be a few years off. So, who knows exactly what that'll look like?
Yeah.
It's nice to know for sure that they are at least. Well, I mean, the plans can always change. Like,
yeah, they had that set top thing that
they haven't actually announced a device here, so they could come to the end of that process and be like, you know what, it's not worth it, so we can't make it come together.
I honestly think that's a lot more likely than the other outcome.
I don't know. We'll see.
We'll see. It could be a hybrid thing. It could be a Steam Deck like thing.
That would be probably where they'd go with it. Like, I think you asked at some point about the next Xbox a few weeks ago. Like, will there be a Series S equivalent? I think like this is it. If they make a handheld, that'll be the Series S. Like now they have experience with a split platform that has to cater to a lowest common denominator. And so, yeah. And mobile graphics, mobile hardware is getting good enough that you could see some reduced version of the next Xbox, probably.
Mm-hmm. Internet connection required. Finally, so, they've done the dream. Streaming only.
So I could see it being part of the package for the next generation from them.
Oh, like just kind of rolled up into whatever offering they're bringing.
Yeah, it'll just be like, hey, whatever the next Xbox is, here is your portable version of it. Like, the games don't look as good, but hey, they're portable.
Oh, man. You know, Microsoft is in such a weird place. They are probably the most fascinating behind closed doors thing I would want to know at this point. They feel like the biggest question mark of they must be looking at everything from complete hardware revision and speccing out their new console to being like, no, it's all apps, you know, like, and I feel like those things could go equally either way at this point, you know?
Yeah.
Because they would be doing their hardware. Would they even be getting into lock-in for their next console at this point?
I think there's been like loose talk about like, what if you could run Windows on the next Xbox, or what if you could install Steam on the next Xbox, like all kinds of weird shit. Like, they got to do something weird.
Windows CE.
You're talking. Mm-hmm. Good enough for the Dreamcast. Good enough for anything.
Phil Spencer saying there's a handheld, not for a few years though. That's long enough where who knows if we'll even have video games at that point.
Yep. But who can say? They may have been banned by then.
It's the thing, may have been banned. It's the thing that I feel like in corporate America, we heard all the time at CBS is like, look, everybody's looking to buy everybody all the time. We're always in talk. We're always talking about handhelds. Mm-hmm. Sony. Now, I have this PC adapter for my PlayStation VR2 that lets me play this on the thing. I got a little bit too much anxiety, anxious about getting this thing before Sony does a Sony and doesn't sell it anymore. And then it costs 8 times as much on an eBay aftermarket. And it seems like last I checked, those things were readily available. I don't know if they still are, but Brad, do you have the Sony PlayStation VR 1 adapter for your PS5?
I do. I have never opened it.
Good. You're playing Sony's game.
Yep, this is the true PlayStation VR experience.
Get a get ready to package it up and stick it on eBay for $80.
I did a spit take when I saw this headline come across because I thought at first they were talking about the VR2 adapter that just came out.
So did I.
But no, this is the adapter that lets the original PSVR work with PS5. That is that's what they're discontinuing soon.
Yes.
Like this month, I think, right?
There'll be November 26th.
Yes. Right. So if you have a PSVR 1 and want to use it on a PS5, you should get that adapter as soon as possible.
Yeah. Though pretty steep discounts still on the PSVR 2, or did they go back up? They had been,
I don't know if the prices have gone back up or not. I mean, the thing about the VR 1 though, is remember games are not forward compatible. So you can only play PSVR 1 games on a original PSVR headset.
I do remember that now. Yes.
There's some stuff in there. Like Astrobot Rescue Mission is the big one to me. Like the first Astrobot game is a PlayStation VR exclusive. And that game's awesome.
Do you think there's some like huge technical reasons why that's not brought over?
No. They absolutely could port it, but it might be a lot of work.
Hmm. My PlayStation VR 1, since my VR 2 I got, is in a bin. Yep. That thing is, yep. Along with my wands.
The Move controllers.
Oh, the Move controllers. Yeah. Yes, I think I was reading like what's locked up on that headset. I want to say Resident Evil 7's VR mode still only exists on PSVR 1.
Okay,
as another example.
I want to say on the PlayStation Super Hot VR might be PS.
That might be right. I can't remember if that VR got brought only? Over.
I mean, you can play that on other platforms, but yeah, I don't think that has made it to 2 yet.
Yeah, but like those two I just mentioned are literally exclusive to just that headset. So there are still reasons to have that thing or be able to play it.
Well, if you want it and get a reasonable price for it, like I said, they're saying November 26th or until supplies last. Don't forget, you got to get the it's the camera, that PlayStation camera.
Yeah, that PlayStation camera we all use and love and know very well.
Do you guys have the PS5 camera?
No.
Okay, good.
Not at all. Smart didn't choices. Even consider it.
I have it. I don't know why.
Did you ever answer for that? Did you ever say why you bought it?
I thought it was going to work with the VR stuff. I really did. I was confused. I was a confused boy. But you need to put the other.
Well, now you have a collector's item.
Nope.
That no one owns.
Yeah, that's right. Look at me. I'm a collector.
Mm-hmm.
All right. That's your PlayStation VR warning there. In sadder news here, Alex, I did not know Tony Todd had passed away.
Yes. This just happened like in the last few days.
Okay. Age of 69, voice of Venom from Spider-Man 2.
You may also know him as Candyman or, his recurring role in the Final Destination movies or in the movie The Rock, where he is the Rocket Man.
Oh.
Remember?
I had forgotten that.
He's the one who doesn't like soft-ass shit.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah, sure.
Tony Todd, one of the great voices in all of acting,
yes,
period.
Yes, for sure. He did quite a bit of video game work, actually. Mm-hmm. He is three different characters in Dota 2.
Okay.
Trying to think what else.
Half-Life 2?
Yeah, yes, he was in Half-Life 2, Episode 2, and Alex, I believe it was.
Mm-hmm. The Vortigaunts?
Yes.
We saw him in The Crow this year when we were doing the Watchcast.
Oh, and he's in Indiana Jones, the new game coming out next month.
Oh, yeah.
He's in that as well.
Tremendous actor.
Yeah, great, great voice. That really sucks. Losing a lot of great actors, unfortunately.
Yes. Yes, and so Insomniac had a nice post there recognizing Tony Todd. Again, voice of Spider-Man, Venom in Spider-Man 2. I wonder if they will keep that. We'll get to some more, another tale of recasting, but I wonder if Venom and that character will come back in more.
I mean,
Spider-Mans.
They did their big Venom story, so they probably could put take him a break. On the shelf for a bit if they want to.
Oh, I thought, wasn't the rumor that the DLC was going to be Venom-centric? Maybe not.
I don't remember.
DLC, but like I assume we're going to get a like Miles Morales equivalent for 2.
That'd be neat.
Like kind of built on the game, but different character type stuff. I thought the rumor was that you might play as Venom in that, but maybe not.
I mean, Insomniac does have some other stuff going on right now. So
of course, who was the female character? Is it Silk? Is that her name?
Yes. So, well, I mean, there's multiple female spiders in the Marvel universe, but Silk is one of them.
So Silk is the one they tease at the end of that game, though. Or not even tease, like, she's right there.
Yeah.
I wonder if, kind of in the way that they introduced Miles late in one, and then he got his spinoff game, maybe Silk would get the spinoff game for two. I don't know. We'll see.
I mean, there's also, like, Ghost Spider. There's a few other characters they could try and bring into the mix. I would love it if they brought Spider-Ham in. That would make me very happy. Maybe they don't want to pay John Mulaney, I understand, but still.
It doesn't have to be voiced by John Mulaney.
Yes, it does, because he did too good a job.
And speaking of recasting voice actors, obviously Lance Reddick no longer with us as well. Recasting for Silence was done for Lego Horizon Adventures. That's a bummer too.
Yeah,
it sure is.
Still feeling that one.
Both of these guys, just like all time amazing voices.
But and guys who really liked doing video game work, it seemed like.
Yes, for sure.
But recast by Tim Russ, who's a voice actor who's been in a bunch of video game stuff as well.
Also, I mean, Tuvok from Star Trek Voyager.
Oh, yeah?
Always what I will know Tim Russ for.
Okay.
Oh, it's that Tim Russ.
Literally,
okay.
Literally Tuvok from Voyager is who they have recast as Silence.
It's unfortunate because I will just say, that being the only thing I really know him from, I really just think of it. Like, when I see his face, I don't think Tim Russ, I think Tuvok.
Yeah. Same.
I don't know who Tuvok is, but that's not the arms wide open person.
No. Darmok is what you're thinking.
How can I get them confused?
Yeah, Tuvok is a Vulcan.
A Vulcan character from Voyager.
Okay. Again, just recast there, but not only just for Lego Horizon, but in the next Horizon.
Well, I think we don't know that yet, right?
No. The thing being that Silence character, I mean, it is Lance Reddick. It is likeness and
likeness
and voice
and everything. Yeah.
Like, yeah. So
they did, you know, it certainly seems likely that they will stick with Russ for a proper third Horizon, but I guess we don't know for sure.
Yeah, that's more confusing. You know, Silence is still a big player in where the Horizon story is. So I don't know. That one might be a little bit dicier because of the likeness stuff there. And
yeah, I honestly feel like you kind of just have to move to the likeness of the new actor you cast.
And just say, look, if you have a question, look it up. You know,
just like film roles get recast all the time.
Zavala was not really a likeness, right?
No, just a voice.
All right. All
right, Alex, it's your time to shine.
All right.
Oh, yeah. Here, look, our next story here is one that comes out of the multiverse's worst timelines. I don't have to be this mean at Andrew Wilson, but it's definitely...
No, I actually think it's okay.
It's somebody reactivated another Andrew Wilson, and this time they're possibly going to make that Andrew Wilson 77277 CEO of Disney. If you don't remember who Andrew Wilson is, Andrew Wilson is the big boss over at CEO over at Electronic Arts, and Andrew Wilson, I think Alex, I don't know if you want to, but could you describe, use your descriptor you described to me before we started, Andrew Wilson as your
Gigolo Joe from AI.
Is your, yes, he's
he
a
just looks like Jude Law as a sexy robot.
Sure.
He is the sexiest robot CEO I've ever seen.
Yeah.
I mean, he was like, quite literally, not so subtly lampooned by one of his company's own games. Wasn't it the second Mirror's Edge, where the villain is like almost the spitting image of him?
Yes.
So there are talks that he is on the short list up. What is it, with three others, for CEO of Disney?
Because Bob Iger is going to be stepping down at some point.
2026.
Yeah.
His contract expires.
He did that once, and then he came right back.
Maybe Andrew Wilson will cause it. Maybe that's why you pull Andrew Wilson too.
Yeah, whoever comes in and screws it up next time, he will come back again.
It's weird because I know people whose boss was Andrew Wilson while they worked at EA. You know what I mean? Like, he was just sort of like I don't know what level he was then, but to watch him ascend to maybe running the biggest fucking media company
on
Earth.
Wild, right?
I mean, we live in a world of failing upward constantly over and over and over again. I mean, look, it's not that Andrew Wilson has been a complete failure at EA or anything, but like, name a thing he made better at Electronic Arts in his tenure.
Well, I'm guessing shareholder return, probably.
Besides that.
But that's all that the business world cares about is the thing. Like the creative output of EA has not been like on fire necessarily for the last.
Maybe it's keeping EA afloat. The thing too is EA had a very strong relationship with Disney and Lucas.
They were making Star Wars games
for a long time. So maybe he just knows a lot of people in those relationships, those business relationships, despite what it might've looked like on the gaming side, were very strong. And he's made a lot of inroads there. I don't know. At those levels, at those yacht club parties, I have no idea what's happening, Andrew Wilson, possibly not. This could all fall through. Who knows?
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I'm coming into this very much with the attitude of, like, I don't really care which multinational corporation these people are screwing up. Like, it is what it is. But if Disney is very serious about getting back into video game things, I feel like there are probably better video game CEOs you could be pulling from than this guy.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's all anecdotal, but I've never heard a kind word about Andrew Wilson as a manager, as a boss at a company. Like, just nothing about him directionally or how he has shaped EA in his tenure there. No one I know who has ever worked at EA comes back and is like, no, that guy was great.
He's like inspiring.
Yeah.
I don't know. He was never the most inspiring front man on the kind of consumer side, you know, when he'd get up there. But maybe that doesn't mean as much if there are, like Brad said, returns for stuff.
Yeah. I mean, he doesn't seem as actively caustic as John Riccitiello was, but like, I don't think this guy has the juice.
We'll see. I don't know. It's a weird crossover story. Hey, people in video games, this person that you know who brought you EA's last, I don't know, how long has he been there? 10 years?
I think. At least the last decade.
Could possibly be in contention. That's going to do it for the news. We have a podcast email here. We have an email, and it's part of a podcast, and those two things are the same. podcast@nextlander.com. I don't know. We have too much in the email section here. Brad, you're still under the dilation effects here.
Still not reading super great yet.
So I think we'll save the emails for the next show. So get them up. Get them good.
Get them in there.
Get them loaded. Hey,
if you need your absolutely need a dose of it right now, the patron Q&A is up right now over on the Patreon.
That was a fun one.
Yeah.
You can go over to patreon.com.
As fun as they get these days.
Which are always fun, hanging out with the community. Hey, despite what happens outside those walls, always a good time. Good questions. Yes, you can check that out over at patreon.com/nextlander, where you can check out a bunch of stuff. You can check out our Watchcast going on right now, which is wrapping up its box office bombs with Spirits Within, his last one we just recorded. That'll be up next week. But Waterworld is up. Waterworld and Cutthroat Island. So memorable. And those are up now currently. And like I said, Spirits Within should be up next week over on the Patreon. We got the Q&A, we'll have the Planorama for next month. I'm getting ahead of myself because we have a vacation coming up over on Thanksgiving side, and we're trying to think a little bit ahead and what we can get in before that. Actually, speaking of which, I think we'll be doing the poll in November, but the actual Patron's Choice stream when we get back.
Yeah.
In December. So you can look for the poll over probably the last week of November, but we'll be out that week, so we'll do the what the results of that poll is in December. Bunch of other stuff going on. I've got Silent Hill going. I'm going to finish that up not terribly soon, but in soon-ish. I'll probably finish that up on stream. I'm going to keep that going. I wonder if I can finish that before Thanksgiving. Maybe making good progress there. Maybe.
Can I finish Fallout this week? Maybe.
You definitely can finish, and you can sound great doing it, hopefully. Yep.
Yes, I think the plan, I just got my audio preprocessor just came in.
Great.
I think the plan is I'm going to point a camera at that thing and we're going to dial it in live.
Dial them in. Let's go. You can tune into that on Thursday. And then Friday, Brad and Patrick are back on that Volgar tip. Volgar 2, I should clarify, because you both beat Volgar and we should give you the credit you deserve. That's all happening here. And like I said, a bunch of stuff over on the Patreon, patreon.com/nextlander, where you can go and support us, keep us going. Do we count as independent media? I guess we do.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
We're not corporate owned.
I wouldn't say independent journalism, but...
I haven't done journalism in at least 10 years, man.
Yeah. The eye doctor asked me this morning, who do you work for? And I said, self-employed.
Okay, great.
That's correct.
We are self-employed, but we are mostly employed by you. The listener. So if
you're our bosses.
Yeah. So if you want to go over there and support us, because I'll tell you what, health insurance renewal is coming back up. So as my boss, everyone out there, help me out. You can go over to patreon.com/nextlander, find a tier that's right for you, get a bunch of goodies when you do it. Go over there, tons of stuff to unlock and check out. It's waiting for you over at patreon.com/nextlander. There is one tier there that gets their names read on this year's show, and it's the Mysterious Benefactor tier, and I'm going to read those names for you right now. Starting with Sean Miller, RRE, Infelicitous Rips, Casey Park, Kelly F., Brian Lucier, Skywarp, John Hubbard, NXL Fallout Shelter Fund, Evan Cook, Mark Wilhelm, Jerry Lee, Deidre Says, Trans Rights, Gary Pejke, Robert Fisher, Bunny Fiend, Jad Rita, Statics, Fantasticasm 89, Brian Murphy, Randy Duax, Randy Alderson, Crow, Andrew Tiebkin, Alex Wu, It's Me JP, Edward Chick, Andrew Slosky, Steve Lin, Matthew Herrig, David Campos, and Tyler Treese. Those are our Mysterious Benefactors for this week. You could be a Mysterious Benefactor. We don't hide how to do it. It's right there on the Patreon. But we will act like it's very mysterious and cool, and I will treat you as a Mysterious Benefactor.
It's an exclusive club.
Very exclusive. Thanks to everyone who supported us, Mysterious Benefactors and otherwise, again, over on the Patreon. Couldn't do it without you. Wouldn't do it without you. Can't do it without you. And that's
can't, won't, don't.
That's what we say here. that's our motto. Can't, won't, don't. We're going to keep on doing it. Thanks, Alex Navarro.
Thank you.
Thanks, Brad Shoemaker. Hope your eyes are adjusting to your lights.
Oh, yeah.
Over there. Yeah. Getting better. And the dilated pupils are super annoying because they just don't work.
It's a little freaky.
Yeah. Can you put glasses on? Could you get reading glasses to focus?
I don't know. Because when they asked if I wanted to, and it's been 3 years, I was like, yes, do the full health check. You should just do this. But he was like, okay, your vision's going to be pretty blurry for a while and very sensitive to light.
Maybe it's a constant change, like as they're recovering, as the muscles.
I guess so. I don't know.
Come back in your eyeballs. Good for you.
Just another thing to break.
Nah, get them checked out. Take care of yourself. And also use up your deductibles before the end of the year. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We appreciate it. We'll be back soon with another Nextlander podcast. Thank you, Alex Navarro.
Thank you.
Thank you, Brad Shoemaker.
Thank you.
And we'll be back soon.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall.
No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.